Hello and welcome to The Rundown, a weekly podcast from Politics Home. I'm your host, Alan Tolhurst, and with me to discuss the vexed issue of housing policy is Bob Seeley, the Conservative MP for the Isle of Wight, John Myers, co-founder of the London YIMBY, the Housing Campaign Group, as well as Dan Tomlinson, Labour's parliamentary candidate in Chipping Barnet and a former Treasury official. So this kind of episode came out of last week's episode, really, where we discussed the local elections and kind of always came back to housing. People on one side saying the government's failure to build houses was blamed, why they lost, and on the side why, you know, failure to block developments was also blamed. So Bob, starting with you, which side are you on? Did you lose 1,000 council seats by building too many or too few homes, do you think?
I don't necessarily think that is a critical reason why the elections happened as they did and we lost those seats. I think the reason we lost those seats is that we're being judged on the last year of government, which frankly wasn't good enough. And I'm the first to admit it. And we should have been better last year. We had a 6 months, which was very difficult. We weren't focused enough on what we should have been doing. And I think we're being judged on that. Are we losing votes because of housing? It's difficult to say we're losing young votes because of housing, but we're certainly losing older votes because people feel their communities are under siege. So there's a way that we need to do housing better, frankly, and that means not being dependent on low-density, car-dependent, out-of-town, greenfield development, but prioritising to a much greater extent than we do brownfield, and also, if need be, having a new tour of council house and local housing association building, because we're not going to hit those numbers unless we do that. Mm. But to be more creative and more original about how we do that. And that's really what the rebellion that Theresa Villiers and I led, that's what it was about. It wasn't just saying no, it was just saying, coming up with frankly better answers.
So that, yeah, we'll come on to that. The rebellion that was last year to knock down that target to build 300,000 homes a year. So you don't think there's kind
of... It wasn't to knock it down. It was to change the emphasis. We have some of the lowest density cities in the world. Yeah. Mm. We have a small island with a fast growing population. We either bulldoze a large chunk of our agricultural land and we hit quality of life, or we reinvest in our towns and city centres. You look at the Isle of Wight. The Isle of Wight's population has grown by about 50% in 60 years. In the same period, there are a stream of significant great northern and midland cities, the city populations of which have declined, not relatively, but absolutely. Mm. And there are three great trends that we're dealing with. Firstly, the move from northern Midland city centre to suburb. Secondly, the flow of humanity from the north to the south. And thirdly, the frankly overwhelming rates of immigration that we're now experiencing. And all these things are putting extraordinary pressure on the south, the southeast, but also suburbs up and down the country.
John, can I bring you in on that?
Look, I think it's welcome to hear Bob support that we need more urban densification. We need to use the land that we do use more efficiently. There's no doubt about that. And you can do that in ways that bring communities along. It doesn't have to mean high rise, which can be very unpopular. You can do it with terraced housing. You can do it with blocks, flats, call them mansion blocks, if you like. Obviously, the geography of this is all very important. And London has been exporting its housing crisis for 80 years. So I can take you back to the 1920s when the government was urgently trying to push people northwards. And the Barlow Report in the 1940s was also focused on that same thing. And we have to recognise we need to help the cities that have not done as well. We need to make sure they have the right transport. We need to help them to densify as well. But we can't wave a magic wand and eliminate London as a big centre of productivity in the UK. And if we do that, unfortunately, as we tried that, in fact, with Birmingham in the 50s and 60s, and a lot of those jobs went to Singapore or other countries. So we need to help each city with its strengths. But I do think we need to address London's housing crisis. You know, a lot of that can be done within London's boundaries. Mm. But the key is to find ways to do this that pretty much everyone can live with, because what we can't have is endless ping pong between parties where young people are the ones who suffer. We need to find sustainable solutions that will last and will actually start to address the problem.
I strongly agree with that.
Dan, obviously you're running in Chipping Barnet against Theresa Villiers, who, as Bob pointed out, was leading that rebellion against the kind of the top-down targets. You know, what are things like in your constituency in Chipping Barnet, and what's said there about London's kind of housing crisis in general?
Yeah, it is. It's really clear that London has a housing crisis. We know that, you know, on average, people renting in London are spending half of their income in rent. And just as John was saying, that housing crisis is spilling out, yes, to outer London and then beyond into towns and cities in the southeast in particular. And one of the implications of that is that there are many more people who aren't able to fulfill that dream of owning their own home. So, you know, when Bob was my age and I'm 30, just 15% of his peers lived in the private rented sector. And now almost 40% of people my age live in the private rented sector, where conditions aren't as good, where you lack that security that people need and that people deserve. And so I can see, and I meet these people when I'm out on the doorsteps each weekend in the constituency, people who are still living with their parents, who are renting and are struggling with the cost of living. And that's why we in the Labour Party have been putting forward some policies in recent days to try and make some long-term strategic changes to housing and planning, rather than making little smaller changes here and there that won't really deal with the big issue, which is we just don't have enough homes in the right places in this country.
Yeah, well, we'll come on to kind of Keir Starmer's speech about the Green Belt and housing targets, that sort of. But Bob, you know, the government got rid of that target to build 300,000 homes, which it never really hit. But it looks like the number of homes maybe next year will go down to maybe built around half that, around 150,000 homes. You know, isn't it the case that having those targets helps lift up the amount of houses that need to be built? If you say that houses need to be built kind of all over the place, doesn't having that higher target allow that to take place?
Okay, let me correct you there. We haven't got rid of the target at all.
Right.
We have accepted that the target needs to remain, and Michael Gove was adamant saying we've got the target. By the way, the target is completely arbitrary.
Yeah.
It could have been 220, it could have been 250, it could have been 400. There is no statistical or scientific base for that target. So if you want to talk about targets, we can talk about targets in relation to house formation, or we can talk about targets in relation to immigration, or housing targets in relation to immigration. But the 300,000 target itself is really quite a nebulous target, which is, I think, rather irritating that it was chosen. Because, for example, if we'd chosen 250, in the last 5 years, we have been building well over 200,000, about 200,000, 220,000, 230,000 a year. For the record, that was only done twice in the 13 years of New Labour. So however good or bad you think the Conservatives' housing record is, it has always been stronger, and we've almost always built more houses than comparative Labour governments. Mm. But the question is now is how we build a more sensitive policy which relies less on the lazy greenfield developer. And the elephant in the room here is the 900,000 permissions currently held, which are granted but are not being built out. The 10 major developers in this country, who frankly don't get enough stick for this, control 70% of those permissions. So if actually the amount of permissions is just shy of a million, which I think is the true figure, about 700,000 of them are held by the 10 big, dare I say, oligarch land property companies, who have a vested interest in keeping their share price high, in keeping their bonuses high, in keeping house prices high, and keeping land prices high.
So would you want to see Michael Gove tackle that somehow? Stop land banking?
Yes, because one of the things that we've had a lot of things in our agreement with government, and it wasn't all saying no, no, no. Let me give you some stuff where we were saying yes, 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 get on with it. We want more compulsory powers for local government. There are plenty of cases on the Isle of Wight. We have beautiful buildings, old hotels, which are just lying empty. Let's get them converted into flats, or let's get them back into use. That's the first point. Secondly, we want a use it or lose it rule. We want tougher, much tougher measures on developers. That at the moment, they've got about 15 years to use planning. So if anyone thinks, if Dan or John or anyone thinks that giving out another 100,000 permissions on the Greenbelt or anywhere is going to mean 100,000 homes just like that, they are living in a fantasy world. That will just be land banked by Persimmons, by these big companies, and it will just mean an increase in their share price of 5%. What we have at the moment is a failure of the market in this country. Yes? And Nick Bowles, I don't have a great deal of time for some of Nick Bowles' opinions, but to credit to Nick, on housing he was correct. He said we're not really going to reach targets unless we do council house building and housing associations. And actually the government is ploughing money into housing associations and encouraging councils like the Isle of Wight Council to have council house companies, because we can be granting permission on the sites that we own for housing. But that also means government moving much more quickly, whether it's a Labour government or a Tory government. Camp Hill prison site on the Isle of Wight, for example. You know, I don't want to bring everything back to the island, but I use the example of the island, Alan, because I know it well. Camp Hill prison site has been empty for 9 years. Why can't we have that? We want to use that for housing on the island because it's near Newport. You know, it's a brownfield site. Let's use it. There are Homes England are being ridiculously slow in getting land forward for development. And frankly, they should be empowered like a development corporation to give themselves planning permission within reason in order so they can build, so we can get building moving. I would really favour the government taking almost emergency powers to say, right, these areas of land, we're buying them, or this former military site, within 6 months, we're going to have planning permission for a green village, a high density, high quality green village that's going to be 5,000 homes here or 5,000 homes there. I think we need to drive this forward more. But we are neuralgic, because our constituents are neuralgic, about these mass greenfield, low density, car dependent, unenvironmentally friendly, bad for the environment, housing estates, plonked down over acres upon acres in the south. And in my case on the island, it is killing my tourism economy, which is worth over £500 million a year for us. And our landscape, the landscape celebrated by Keats, by Turner, by Tennyson, is just going to be snowed under. And people come to the Isle of Wight for the beauty of our landscape, not the beauty of our housing estates.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to the green belt stuff in a minute. But John, just on land banking, is that something that the Yimby Alliance have looked at? Bob's right, it's something like a million permissions since 2012 of houses that have not been built, and the kind of impact that that's had.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the existing system incentivizes a whole range of behaviours that we probably would prefer not in an ideal case. And it's the existing planning system has unfortunately driven thousands upon thousands of small builders to the wall. We used to have a much less concentrated development industry, and we now have a much
more concentrated... John, that was the financial crash. That was the financial crash that finished off medium-sized house builders. And you're absolutely right. One of the things that we need to do is get into place smaller brownfield sites, which the big boys are not interested because they want a land bank. But those smaller sites, you get smaller companies, smaller developers. We need to get them engaged. You're absolutely right. But that was a financial crash, not necessarily the system. Sorry to interrupt you.
Sorry, I completely agree it was the financial crisis. I think if you look at the numbers on concentration going back to the 1930s, concentration has increased in construction since the 1930s. So I'm not sure it was just a financial crisis, but I agree that was a major cause of it. But a lot of these developers are just responding to the rational incentives the system gives them, and we need to change those incentives. We need to make sure the permissions that are there are used.
Yeah.
But many of those permissions are not necessarily where you would really want the housing built, or where the housing is economic to be built. And some of those permissions may not be economic to develop. What we need to be doing also, and I agree, look, if we grant 100,000 permissions, that's certainly not going to translate overnight into 100,000 new homes. What we need to do is find more and better ways that aren't just targets of delivering just substantial amounts of densification. So since the Second World War, we've never grown the housing stock at the rate that we achieved in the 1930s or in the 1820s. I cannot name a single other industry that has underperformed the 1820s. Something has gone very badly wrong, and we need to deliver better for everyone, for young people and for the communities who are seeing housing built.
Yeah, Dan, I'll bring you in. You know, Labour's policy this week, Keir Starmer talking about bringing back the housing targets and building in a limited way, perhaps on the green belt, you know, saying that a generation and its hopes are being blocked by those who more often than not enjoy secure homes and jobs that they're denying to others. It's been said this shows a braver side of Starmer and a boldness. The Times and their leader said it makes Michael Gove look timid by comparison. Do you think they've kind of stolen a march on the Conservatives? And what did you think of Starmer's speech to the House Builders Federation?
So it has been good to see, as we get closer to the election, we're going to be seeing more and more from the Labour Party as we set out our position, the sort of hope that we can provide, but also the stability and the security that we can give to families. And Keir was totally right to focus on housing this week. And that's all part of our mission to make the economy the fastest growing economy in the G7. And we can't do that without fixing the housing market and the housing crisis. And, you know, it's interesting to hear Bob listing all the different changes that he'd like to see. The Conservatives have now been in power for 13 long years.
Yeah.
And we have a housing crisis that's worse than it's ever been in this country, and pretty much worse than it's ever been in London. We can see some examples, though, of when Labour is in power, we do get houses built. And Sadiq Khan in London...
What, like in London?
Yeah, Sadiq Khan in London has started over 116,000 new, genuinely affordable homes. And we're now building more new council homes than at any time since the 1970s in London. And that's the difference that Labour in power can make.
What did you make of the particularly the comments about the Green Belt? I mean, he said that, you know, it will support residents' ability to have their say in getting them involved. You know, can you reconcile those two things? It's quite hard to say we're going to build on the Green Belt, but we're also going to take local people into consideration, because we know a lot of people don't want to see building on Green Belt. They see Green Belt as being kind of sacred term, you know, sacred places.
I think it's right for government to try and make sure that the system allows, for example, a petrol station that was technically assigned as Greenbelt land in Tottenham to be developed on.
Yeah.
And under the current system, that petrol station stopped a new affordable housing scheme coming forward.
So his sacred petrol station, yeah.
You know, so I think our political debate needs to be sort of more nuanced and informed on the fact that different bits of land might be badged in a certain way, but in reality, when you get out there on the ground and take a picture, you can see it's quite different in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't all green and pleasant fields, the green land. Some of it is disused petrol stations or car parks that are decaying. And instead, you end up finding that developers come forward with proposals to build on greenfield land in the current Tory planning system. And that is because this government and previous Conservative governments haven't grasped the nettle that needs to be grasped in order to get house building up and get our economy growing again.
Yeah, go on. But what did you think of Keir Starmer's comments about the Green Belt?
Just a few factual corrections on that. I would argue that actually that we've been loosening up the system over the past 10 years in order to deliver more housing. And again, if you look at the Conservative record, it is substantially better than the last Labour government in New Labour. I mean, twice they built over more than 200,000 homes in 13 years. We've done that pretty much for the last 5 years. Secondly, and again, look, I just want to get these facts out of the way and then we can focus again on the substance. It's taken 4 years of Sadiq Khan's first term to build the same number of houses in London that Boris Johnson did. So again, Labour's got a dreadful record if you look at where they are in power. Thirdly, I learnt that Lisa Nandy has been being a bit of a NIMBY herself, and I think she is your deluxe shadow secretary of state. It would help if she wasn't fighting green belt development in her own
Michael Gove's done that in his constituency, and he's the housing secretary.
Okay, well, yeah, but hold on. But if the Labour Party is saying let's ignore the green belt, it's not a good look if the shadow secretary of state is fighting against that development in her own patch.
I don't think Starmer said ignore the green belt. He just said there could be some building on the loop.
Okay, I think you understand the point I'm making.
Sure.
I think there's a lack of consistency here. And when it comes to big plans, I see nothing big about any of the plans that Keir Starmer has brought forward. Tinkering with the green belt is neither here nor there. Look, on open borders, he's changed his mind. On nationalised utilities, he's changed his mind. On Extinction Rebellion, he's changed his mind. On joining picket lines, he's changed his mind. On Shabiga Migun, he's changed his mind. On whether a woman has a willy, he's changed his mind. On tuition fees, on doctors' pensions, and all this stuff, he's changed his mind. And he was a Republican until he got a title. So
Got his screen up and is now just having a look at all of the lines
I don't need a list. But I mean, the best thing that you can say about Keir Starmer is he is Sir Keir Tinku. Anyway, back to some serious discussion, if I may. On the greenfield stuff, if a city like Cambridge or Oxford wants to say we've got sort of flat technical greenfield land, we'd rather build on it rather than having this green donut effectively and then having to build large-scale housing estates just the other side of it, I think there is some justification for local control. But again, in the agreement that we've struck with Michael, we want local control. A lot of what we are doing is about giving local authorities the power to do their own thing, to vary, to make it quicker for places like Cambridge to grow, but to grow recognizing that they've got to try to preserve as much of the green fields as possible, higher density, higher quality housing, and not the lazy reliance on green fields. So this is what we are trying to do. It's not about less, it's about better. And very importantly, Alan, you made the point, and I think John may have done as well, about housing and where you have it. If we are trying to drive levelling up, that does mean better jobs on the new generation, a new era of jobs, not only in the Oxford-Cambridge corridor, but also in Tyneside, where you're going to have green energy and all those great things that are going to be happening in the energy field. But if you can combine that with much cheaper housing, so that you've got more affordability, better quality of life, these are going to drive that great reversal. So instead of people going north to south, which has been happening for decades now, people are going to be going from south to north, or at least staying, having a better option to stay in the north or in the Midlands, because that's where the jobs of the future are. So actually, levelling up, if successfully done, will take the pressure off places like High Barnet, like Edgware, so you can keep your traditional suburban densities without effectively urbanising that bit of the UK. We won't be suburbanising bits of the Isle of Wight for effectively a mainland market. For the first time in 50 years, we can build for islanders, especially for young ones. And at the same time, we can drive that population density further up north. And I would just say one other thing to that. We are taking in hundreds of thousands of immigrants. And I know we get slated by the Labour Party over the refugee figures. Since 2015, we've taken 480,000. That is a city twice the size of Portsmouth. We've taken huge numbers of refugees. There is no reason why those folks should be being housed in the south. And we need justifiably to build in other parts of the UK outside the south where those refugee folks can be housed in quality housing, but can help rebuild those new communities in the Midlands and the north.
Dan, to bring you in on that, like you talk about going back to the top-down targets and stuff, do you think actually there needs to be more focus maybe from Labour on social housing as part of that rather than just kind of an overall target for housing and therefore, especially in London and other cities, that social housing is a big imperative, I suppose, for Labour to tackle as well?
We have spoken about, and our top team have been being really clear about, we want to increase the size of the social housing sector, make sure we get more affordable housing built, just like we've been doing in London. And I think some of what Bob was saying towards the end of what he said there is totally true, that we do need to make sure that cities in the north, Manchester, Leeds, and other sort of large places across the country outside London and the southeast are growing and have dynamic and strong economies. But we just haven't had that under the Conservatives. We're one of pretty much the only large advanced economies where we only have one large city that is above average in terms of the size of its economy. You know, we have lots of underperforming cities that could be better if they had the investment from government, if they had firms that had stability, that knew they could invest, rather than having a government that had had four chancellors and four budgets and three prime ministers in the space
Dan,
of
sorry.
1 year. At the moment, we're just in the middle of a sort of never-ending economic calamity with the Conservatives. So it's no surprise that we haven't seen the economy growing and that we haven't seen
the country as a whole growing by 23% since 2010. Let's have some serious debate rather than just it's chaos and calamity.
Well, it is chaos and calamity, isn't it?
The economy has grown 23% since 2010.
GDP is flat at the moment and it has been for a long time.
Okay. The year we came out of COVID, we had 8% growth. And we've been flat since because we had our post-COVID bounce immediately afterwards, firstly. But in COVID, every economy in the Western world declined sharply, including
ours. And then
there's
a rebound. Yeah, there's nothing to be said for a growth in rebound. Let's have a look and see what's happening now.
Let's make some serious points, and rather than point scoring. If you're looking at underperforming cities, effectively the story of the UK since the 1960s has been in a deindustrialization process, which has concentrated wealth on the south and southeast. Hence the moral imperative as well as the economic imperative behind the levelling up agenda. Now, some cities, such as Manchester, effectively, which is being driven by getting people back to live in the city centre, which is being driven by the University of Manchester, being driven by a new generation of tech, that is doing fantastically well. If you look at other cities like Oxford and Cambridge that are riding the wet wave of new tech or biotech, etc., they're doing fantastically well as well. It's about, but you're saying government needs to invest. Government is investing vast sums of money, but this is about attracting private enterprise and private sector jobs as well to these places. And that is a combination. In the modern world, that is a combination by providing the right infrastructure, the right background. But a lot of that now is science-led, university-led. And yes, there are towns and cities that are losing out. But actually, to write off the UK and say everywhere is a disaster outside London is incredibly unfair and inaccurate on places like Manchester, on places like Oxford, on places like Cambridge, and in fact, you know, cities like Nottingham as well.
John, I'm going to bring you in now. You know, Bob's saying that the Conservatives have got a good story to tell on housing and that sort of policy. You obviously set up the YIMBY Alliance a few years ago because things weren't going particularly well. Can you just explain what your response is to some of those comments that Bob's making there?
Well, thank you. I'm afraid I'm not going to adjudicate that fight for you, but you know what I will say is it's great to see that both parties understand how critical housing is as an issue, not just for young people, but across the country and in different parts of the country as well. And what we need to see over the next 12 months are the details from each party about what they're going to do and credible explanations of how it's going to work to make sure that we get more delivery going forward. Because I think everyone can agree the last 30 years have just been a disaster for people who need housing in this country, and we need to improve.
Hmm. Yeah, Dan, on that, I mean, it's kind of clear that although, you know, Bob's quite bullish on this stuff, it's clear the Tories have got a real issue putting their party back together on this. You know, how does they create a policy that appeals to both Theresa Villiers, who you're going up against, and Simon Clarke, who's been very outspoken, and the Conservative Party needs to be more pro-housing and build more pieces. Do you think that, how influential do you think housing is going to be come the next election, you know, or is it going to go back to as it normally does, back to the economy, back to cost of living and the NHS? Do you think housing is going to be genuinely on the ballot paper next time round?
I think it will play a part, and I think it will particularly play a part for younger voters who are, you know, experiencing the challenges that we've been discussing today and that Keir Starmer has identified this week. I thought it was interesting, Theresa Villiers was interviewed in The Times last week, and she said that she doesn't know anyone suffering from the housing crisis. And if I look across my constituency, if I think of experience I've been through and others I know are going through in the constituency and across London, there are a lot of families who are struggling with the housing crisis. And so I do think it will be in people's minds. But yeah, of course, NHS, cost of living, and the fact that, to quote pretty much every person I speak to when I'm knocking on doors, everything is a mess in this country. I think that is going to be quite obviously where a lot of the election debate is, and quite rightly so, because we need to fix this country. There's a lot that is broken, and there's a lot that we can mend with a serious government that brings back some stability, that brings back some security for families, and tries to make politics about achieving some long-term goals again, rather than just chopping and changing and undermining our growth prospects, undermining our ability to do things like get to net zero, which, by the way, it was great to hear Keir talking about how planning reform can help with that as well this week. So there's lots that can be done, and there's lots that the public want us to focus on, and housing is part. Will be part of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, John, just on that thought, that line from Theresa Villiers' interview is really interesting, but that she didn't know anyone who was affected by it, but the coalition of people who are affected by it seems to be getting larger and larger. And I wonder if perhaps some of this stuff around policy, it shows that maybe the tide is turning, that coalition of renters, people who want to get on the housing market and haven't been able to, is becoming bigger and actually becoming influential enough that policymakers are starting to really listen to them.
I think that's right. Look, I mean, clearly the proportion of renters has risen, and the proportion of people who like to be able to buy and can't afford to has risen enormously. It used to be very much within reach for a 30-year-old to buy a home in the southeast, and that's just very much no longer the case for most people, unless they have the bank of mum and dad. So there are a lot of voters who are very focused on this as one of their key issues. I think we probably shouldn't forget that over 60% of the country households are homeowners too, so it goes in both directions. But many of those homeowners do care about where their children are going to live. This is a crucial issue, but I think you're absolutely right to say that the parties have to solve for how they can get more housing delivered without losing the swing voters who do get upset when they see things built near them.
Just sort of the final thing, Dan, on a cynical point, it's often said that you know, homeowners are more likely to vote Tory. So if you're pursuing lots of policies about building more houses, are you doing yourself out of perhaps some voters? You know, look at the 2019 election. The Conservatives had a landslide, but they did not win seats in those cities where there is low home ownership, where rents have gone up. I think even this week, the average rent has now gone up to more than £1,000 a month outside of London. Is pursuing a pro house building policy, is it doing yourself out of voters, or do you think that there is a cohort of people who want to vote Labour and want to own their own home as well if they were given the opportunity?
I think there's two things worth saying here. One is that there are lots of homeowners, yes, in constituencies like Chipping Barnet, but many of them have a mortgage and many of them say to me that they're now struggling with their mortgage payments that have gone up by hundreds of pounds, in part because the Tories crashed the economy last year, and the public know that, and the Conservatives know that too. That's why they're trying to make everyone forget that Liz Truss was Prime Minister and that we had that calamity last year. So I think on that side of housing, I think a lot of homeowners can see that Labour will bring that stability and security that they want and that they haven't had. And then I think the other thing worth saying, and this, you know, this is a bit of a complex case to make, but it's totally true that part of the problem that places like Chipping Barnet and other areas that are experiencing pressure from new housing are experiencing is because of the current planning system that means that developers find it very, very, very difficult to get anything through. There's so much uncertainty and chaos in the system. An application can be accepted or rejected by a planning committee or by a planning inspector or by, in London, the mayor of London or by the secretary of state. It means that when they come forward with proposals, they're often potentially too big, too many tower blocks. And we can see this happening in the constituency. And if you had a system that provided more certainty for people and for residents, set by councils, led by the wishes of local people in where they want to see different types of housing, then you could have that certainty that would mean that you wouldn't get housing that wasn't out of kilter with what local people want. But the current system, the current Tory system that people like Theresa Villiers are supporting, is leading to some of the house building that people don't want to see.
That's all we've got time for this week, but you can read all the latest on the big stories from Westminster at politicshome.com and keep right up to date by subscribing to our 7-day newsletters by clicking on the link in the top right-hand corner of the website. Thanks to my guests, Bob Seeley, John Myers and Dan Tomlinson. Thanks to you all again for listening. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. If you want to get in touch, then reach out to us on Twitter at politicshome or email us via news@politicshome.com. But for now, I've been Alan Tolhurst and this has been The Rundown.